103.2 for your text. You can send us emails to ray@todayfm.com. Now, we were speaking to Damien Dempsey last week, the day before he was to receive an award from the Irish Water Safety people, recognising the fact that he saved two men's lives earlier this year by pulling them out of the River Slaney. And we thought to ourselves, wouldn't it be great to talk to people who've saved other people's lives? So we have four such people in studio today. If you'd like to introduce yourselves, please.
I'm Marie, I'm 39, originally from Kildare, but Dublin person, and I successfully did CPR on a man outside the train station in Manchester when I was at Dolly Parton weekend.
Marie, you gave too many details there, but anyway, you're very welcome along here. Emmett.
Hi, Ray. My name is Emmett. I'm from Cork. I live in Carrigtool. I saved a 13-year-old boy from drowning in 2008.
Thanks for coming in. Emmett.
How's it going? I'm Mark Forlong. I'm about to save a baby from a three-story house.
Yeah.
Got thrown out to me, so...
I'm Arden, from Dublin, 17. I saved the other people as well from the house.
Right, you're all very welcome. It's the first time that we've had sort of somebody who's in the news in one of these panels. So thanks for coming in, because I know you don't get up this early normally, lads.
Yeah,
Mark,
here, so. Should be in bed.
Yeah, yeah. Well, get them a coffee there. Get those two lads a coffee or something else. Maybe Red Bull. Let's get to you, Marie, first. You're... First of all, you weren't supposed to be there, were you?
No, I was the sub. Someone pulled out of a girly weekend and I got the last minute call, do you fancy coming over? So it was friends who, my husband's Welsh, so it was some of the Welsh friends that organised the trip. So I flew into Manchester and met up with them.
Okay, and you're going to see Dolly Parton because you're a big fan.
Oh, huge.
Yeah, so you're in Manchester Airport and you're on the way out.
Got as far as the train station Piccadilly and was leaving, but then got a text from the girls saying that they were 10 minutes out behind me, so I hung around a bit more and waited for them. The three of us walked out of the train station and there was a bit of commotion outside. Mm. We were walking past it, but I saw two feet sticking out of the crowd and kind of went, oh, maybe just someone's had a few and collapsed, but then just stopped and went back and then realised there's something more going on. So there's a man lying, he's in his, I'd say his 50s, and I could see he was in trouble and his ears were going black. He was proper collapsed.
Right.
So got down on the ground and tried to see what was happening. Was he breathing?
You're a nurse, so yeah. Did you say to people, can you remember saying to people, stand aside, I'm a nurse, I know what I'm doing.
Hell no. No, but the funny thing was, I'd be, because I'm a nurse, I can't listen to the show every morning on the radio, yeah. But I download the podcast when I'm at the airport.
Right.
I listened to them. So that morning, I'd listened to the Heart Foundation, trying to teach you how to resuscitate a dummy.
Yeah.
In the podcast. So that was the weird thing.
That is weird, isn't it?
That's really, just the coincidence.
Yeah. So first of all, you weren't supposed to be there.
No.
And secondly, you'd just been listening to a podcast on CPR.
Yeah.
So you get down on your knees to this man.
Get down,
right.
And there's people pulling him and going, oh, he's having a fit. People are trying to turn him on his side. And then I realised he wasn't breathing. And another man came down on the ground with me. All I could see was a big-shouldered man across from me. And I was like, do you know CPR? And he went, yeah. I was like, right, we're going to start it. So we started doing the chest compressions. And then someone from the train station ran out, one of the staff, and went, do you need the defib? And I'm like, yeah, good idea. That came out and we were doing CPR, but I still thought this lad's just fainted or something. We're jumping on his chest. So when you're doing
CPR with the man with the wide shoulders,
yeah.
Does one person do the chest and the other person do mouth to mouth, or what way?
Well, we were just there on the side of the road and we were just doing hands only. They're saying is hands only.
Hands only. And it's that what's your man's name? The oh god. The
staying
footballer.
Alive. Vinny, yeah.
What's his name? Vinny Jones, yeah. Yeah. And it is that staying alive thing.
It's a staying alive, trying to do the
So you do it for a minute and then the other guy takes over.
We were
it?
Doing it as long as it takes a lot out of you, so
does
we were
it?
Taking
yeah.
turns because
yeah,
you're
yeah.
full blast. So they came out with a defib machine and it was funny because I started politely unbuttoning his shirt and then I was like, no, he won't mind, just rip the shirt off. And I was like, what am I doing? And I'd never used these machines before, so just open it up and fair play. I could hug a defib machine in the supermarket now because they're really easy to
yeah.
use. Just stick the pads on and it tells you what to do. But I still thought it was going to say.
Although you're a nurse and you work in theatres and you have
yeah.
these big industrial hospital style
yeah.
defibrillators,
yeah.
You'd never actually worked
no,
with
it? No, I'd never seen one open.
Okay.
And in fairness, in a hospital, if someone collapses, you've got a full team around you within a minute. Yeah, so yeah. So there was nothing.
So my understanding of a defib thing is you just connect it up and then immediately it takes a reading of the heart rate and it decides itself what to do. You don't have to make any decisions.
No, it's great. It tells you what to do. It tells you to stop doing everything and it tries to read it. And I still thought it's going to read a heart rate now and I'm going to look really stupid on the ground here. and then it was like... I think it said shock, going to shock or something. So it tells everyone to step away, and it shocks, and then it tells you to start doing CPR again if there's no heart rate. So
and is it a voice or is it?
It's a really loud American lady. Yeah.
Yeah. Stand away from the body.
Yeah. So everyone just stand. And then it shocked the man, and he didn't get any heart rate. So it tells you to keep doing CPR. So then I went, oh, it's real. I did think it was going to go, no, he's fine.
Yeah.
But we started doing, so I took over doing CPR and it keeps telling you to do it and then it tells you to stop again. So it's great. It starts telling you what to do as well. And then we were still waiting for an ambulance. Someone had called an ambulance, but there was no sign of it. And we shocked again and nothing. It told you to keep doing CPR. So then this wasn't looking nice at all. And then a paramedic in a car arrived. And he saw what we were doing and he was like, keep doing what you're doing. And he was setting up his equipment and then told us to shock again. And on the third shock afterwards, he started having a heart rate.
Wow.
Which was really, and he started kind of moving. And his eyes, because his eyes looked kind of, the life had gone out of them, shall we say. He started kind of responding a bit. So that was great.
So you had saved his life.
Yeah. But me and my CPR buddy Mike with a big shoulder. It was really random. It was just
so. And he wasn't supposed to be there either.
He was after being on a big night out the night before and had left his car in Manchester, so he was as white as a sheet coming into town to collect.
Luckily, there was no mouth to mouth required.
No, wouldn't have been, no.
Yeah, would have been nice. So eventually the ambulance arrived and the man went off. And Mike was determined to find out if he survived or not.
Yeah, it was the weirdest thing because it was like there was a huge crowd around us. There was people videoing us, usual mental stuff going on. And then they took this man away in the ambulance and it was like a flash mob gone wrong. It's just everyone's gone. It was just me and Mike. My two friends were in a bus stop crying at the time.
Right.
They were just like, oh. And we're like, what do we do now? So we exchanged numbers, really random. Go, I know I'm a married woman, but yeah, I'll take your phone number. Sorry, Lee.
Broad shoulder, Mike.
Yeah, lovely shoulder, Mike. And he was adamant. He had a friend who's a paramedic, and he was adamant he was going to find out because we'd know ID. We'd know the man had nothing on him. He'd a phone, and that was it. So I went off then and had an emergency gin and tonic and
as you do,
and then had a great night at Dolly Parton. So Mike kept in touch over the weekend, and then I came back on the Monday and I got a call from, I think on the Thursday or Friday, that he'd actually found out that the man had completely recovered, so much so that by the time they got him to hospital, I think they'd put in a call that he was in cardiac arrest, but he was so well, the hospital were like, what are you doing? This man's fine.
Right.
Yeah.
So you don't know who he
we never know who he is. We couldn't find out.
He hasn't tried to find out who saved his life.
Yeah. And the hospital, I suppose, can't give out. No one can give out ID of anyone, so...
Right.
It's just one of those random...
And we're in the wrong country, really, to put out a call.
Yeah.
But well done. Well done. Emmett, Mark and Aaron also saved lives and we're going to talk to them about their stories after a quick commercial break.
The Ray D'Arcy Show on Today FM.
Yeah, it's Hero Morning on the show and we've spoken to Marie already, who saved a man outside a train station in Manchester, and Emmett Wilmot is from Cove. Morning, Emmett.
Morning, Ray.
So tell us, you're in the Navy, are you? Or?
No, I was. I retired in 2011.
Okay. You don't look... old enough to have retired from anything.
Yeah, looks can be deceiving, really.
Right, okay. So, what time of the year was it?
It was May in 2008. It's like Marie's story, there's a lot of sliding doors moments.
Right.
Like, for example, the ship was alongside the Key Wall in Cove, and it wouldn't normally be. It would normally be in the naval base in Haulbowline, but I can't remember. There must have been a festival on or something, so maybe the ship was going to be open for the weekend for the public. They do that every now and then.
Yeah.
So the second thing is, I'm not working that weekend. I'm at home. I'm in Carrigtool. It's, I suppose, 5 or 6 miles away, whatever. But my youngest son, Jake, had a soccer match on Saturday morning in Cove. So I was going to Cove anyway that Saturday morning. And just as it happened, I got a phone call from a fellow that I was working with saying there was a problem with refrigeration or something on the ship. There was an issue anyway. So look, I said, I'm going to be in Cove anyway. So I'll call down and have a look, and we can have a chat about it, and we'll sort it out.
So that was your area of responsibility, although it's your day off.
Yeah, but I said I was going to be there anyway. Yeah, so I said, look, I'll call in and give you a hand or whatever. So I called down to the ship, and I went aboard the ship. I brought Jake with me because there's a little tuck shop on the ship, and he loves going on board and having a look around and all the rest of it. So we sorted out whatever issue was to be sorted out, and we were leaving the ship, and I had my car parked up on the quay wall, and I was strapping Jake into the back of the car, putting on his seatbelt, and out the corner of my eye, there's a nice walkway along there by the train station, and I saw a friend of mine approaching, and I said, I'll hang on here and have a chat with him before I go home, or to the match or wherever I was going. So that delayed me another 2 or 3 minutes. Okay. And just at that moment then, I heard a commotion, and whatever way I looked up, I could see a group of people standing at the quay wall looking down into the water, and then the loud screeches, female screeches, and I said, something's gone seriously wrong here. So I went over and I looked into the water, and I could see down between the ship and the wall there was a young boy flailing around in the water. So I jumped off the quay wall, we'll say, over the railings onto the ship to see if I could grab something, a ladder or a rope, something to put down, you know. That was my first instinct.
Yeah.
And to be quite honest, it kind of went blank after that, because the next thing I knew, I was in the water.
Right.
And I obviously didn't have time to think about it, because my phone went with me, my wallet went with me, everything was in my pockets. So I knew I had to get him to stabilize him, because he was panicking. I could see he was panicking, and it's the worst thing to do. So I grabbed a hold of him, calmed him down, and then what I did was I jammed my back on against the wall, and I put my knee on the ship.
Okay, so that's about,
I think it was 16 or 17 inches.
Right.
Do you know the boys, the rubber boys that keep the ship?
Yes, that
distance.
Width. Yeah.
So I grabbed them, and one of those boys have a rope, a little line on each end. So I don't know, did I let one end go, or did one of the lads let go? But because one end was untied, the boy swung down, but it left the rope dangling down so that I could grab a hold of it.
Yeah.
So I wrapped it around my wrist. Now, having said that, it was covered in oil and grease and everything else, so it kept slipping out of my hand, and I could feel us slipping down. But then I'd pull up again, and then we'd slip down again. But the main problem I realised at that point, and I didn't realise it until it was too late, was Cork Harbour is a big place. Something passes here where it's curtains.
You're crushed.
We're crushed, yeah. The two of us were goners at that point. But I never dawned on me until it was too late. I was in there at that point. Yeah. You're committed in, so I just had to pray that nothing passed.
Hold it there, because we have to take the news at 10, and we'll get the end of this life-saving story from Emmett after the news at 10 o'clock.
The Ray D'Arcy Show on Today FM.
Now, when we left Emmett's story, himself and a 13-year-old boy were stuck between a ship and the harbour wall down in Cove, about, what, less than 2 foot?
Yeah, I think at the time.
Hold on, where are you? There you are.
I think at the time somebody measured it at 16 inches or something like that. Foot and a half.
Okay, so you've sort of rammed yourself with your back to the wall and your foot up against the ship.
My knee, yeah. For all intents and purposes, yeah.
Yeah, and there's an oily, slippy rope that you're...
Yeah, I had that around my wrist, yeah.
Right.
And I felt us slipping down every now and then, but I'd pull it up again. And I think at the end of the day, we were there 7 minutes maybe, but it felt like 7 hours. So everyone up on deck and up on the quay wall was scrambling to try and come up with an idea to get us out. Which is funny actually, because to this day I don't know who came up with the idea, and it worked, but someone thought to get a mooring line. The mooring line on a ship, as you know, I mean, they're very, very heavy to lift.
Huge ropes. Yeah,
they're massive things.
Yeah.
So a couple of lads on the ship had formed a kind of a loop, like in a swing shape. So they had one side of that on the ship, and then the civilians up on the quay wall had the other side. And they put the loop down between the ship and the quay wall.
And they brought to where you were.
I sat, kind of manhandled the young fella, met you up onto the swing. I told him, hold on for dear life and don't let go. I don't think he was caught anyway. But and then both sets of people pulled up, and up he went and out.
And what about you?
They came down for me. Then they put the loop back down. Obviously, I was a lot heavier, I can imagine.
Yeah. Matthew's name, you met him. How did he fall in the first place?
As far as I'm aware, what happened was he was down visiting. I think he was from Limerick. They were visiting Cove, doing the sightseeing and all that. And there's a lovely walkway along there by the train station, and the Heritage Museum and all that stuff was there. But I think, as I said, the train station is behind. I think what happened was he was looking at the ship. I suppose it was new to him or whatever. And a train pulled in behind him. And I think he turned around to look at the train, but kind of was still moving forward.
I see, yeah.
And he just went straight down the gap.
Fell off.
Between the gap, yeah.
Wow. And you know a little bit about him now. So he was 13 at the time.
Yeah.
Could he swim at all? Or
well, you see, again, whether he could swim or not, I think it was irrelevant at that point, because he there was no
panicked.
Room to
yes,
swim.
Yeah,
he panicked. And he was just flailing about.
Yeah.
So,
because you were saying that you were thinking, and then it went blank, and you were in the water.
Yeah,
and yeah, yeah. And that's something that happens, isn't it? Because I was saying the other day, would I have the presence of mind in a situation to do?
It doesn't come into it, no.
Doesn't it?
Absolutely not. Because if it did, I would have taken my phone out of my pocket. I would have taken out my wallet, my car keys, everything else. But
And Damien Dempsey said as well that you know, he has learned from, you know, he's a strong swimmer, but when somebody is like Matthew and they feel that they're going down, that they could pull you down as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Was there a sense of that at all? Or?
Well, I was shouting in order, just don't panic, don't panic, we're going to be grand, we're going to be grand. At one point, all right, I thought I'm going to have to belt him maybe, or do something, but it didn't get to that point.
Yeah, slap his face or something.
You would do that. I would have, because I wasn't going. The two of us could have been lost, but I think, you know, he looked at me and I said, look, we're going to be fine, we're going to be fine. I had a hold of him, and when I sat him across my leg and my knee, when he felt that there was something,
he came round
underneath him, maybe that he wasn't as bad panicky wise then.
Amazing story. We'll get more detail in a moment, but on to Mark and Aaron, the lads who are in the newspapers today. Morning, thanks for getting up for us, lads. Yeah,
well, no problem.
So Mark, we spoke to you yesterday when you were in the throes of it all. What time did it happen on Monday night morning, wasn't it?
Yeah, roughly 5 o'clock.
5 o'clock, right. Tell them again, you heard screams?
Just heard screams. We went out for a bit of fresh air, me and my cousin, and we heard screaming. And we ran to the top of the road to see where it was, and we just turned around to the diamond, and I just seen a window with full of flames coming out of it. And then when I got halfway down the road, I just seen a baby out the window.
And we know now that Derek, Mila's dad, was holding 3-month-old Mila out of a third-story window.
Yeah, he held her out to keep her away from the flames, and all the smoke would have caught into her lungs if he hadn't done it.
Yeah.
I just remember I heard him screaming, help, and then when he seen me, he said, catch the baby. And I looked up and he just said, catch the baby. So when he thrown her down, I just jumped over the wall and put him in my arms and caught her.
It's just such an amazing story. I'm not being smart now at all, but no. Can you just show us, can you remember, just do a reconstruction for, I know it's radio, but I just want to see how you caught her. Because I have a theory in my head as to how you caught the baby. Because 3-month-old baby from a third story window. So go on, just do what the action with her.
I think I caught her like that.
Oh, like that, yeah.
I caught her by the head and just came down.
And did you go down with her like a bit? Yeah, yeah. Aaron's laughing there.
Because he has to deal with her all day yesterday.
Did he? So, that's your party piece now. You let me, you know. And then I caught her like that. And Mila's her name, 3 months old. Yeah. And, not a scratch.
I think there was a bone or two on her face.
Was there from up there? Yeah, but from the throw and the catch, no damage.
I don't think so, no.
Yeah. You're a hero, all of your heroes. And Aaron, you're Mark's cousin.
Yeah.
So you come around as well.
Yeah, I was beside him.
Yeah.
He caught the baby, and then fella Wayne, he lives about
a couple of doors up.
Yeah.
A couple of doors up. He went in through the neighbour's house out the back, so we went in after and got over the wall. Got Adele, Lola and Gary out the back, so that was the other six people.
Yeah,
I was getting over the wall. What happened?
What happened?
The windows went through or something, and they flung me over the wall. And just as when he pulled the shed door across and blocked all the glass, I'm hitting the deal. So
right.
Then you're trying to get the dogs out of the next door's neighbour's house because all the smoke. You got one dog out, and then the fire brigade told us that we had to leave because the roof was going to come through, and then he got to the dog.
So you saved the dog?
Yeah.
Not quite like saving the baby, but no, but you know, yeah, fair shoes. And so Derek and Charlene are the parents.
Yeah.
Now, poor Charlene had to jump from the third story, and she's quite injured. She broke a leg, I think.
I think she broke her jaw too.
Right. And then Charlene's little sister and her brother and her mum, they were also in the house, and they're all okay.
They were out the back way, Well, the mother had a bit of a injury on her leg.
Did you ever think people would be calling you a hero, Mark?
No.
And what do you think, you know, you didn't think twice about it, you didn't shout up at Derek, no, I can't catch a baby, do you want me to catch a baby?
No, I was just saying the flames, I was just saying the baby out the window, I was like, right, go on, hope for the best, pray to myself, hopefully I'll catch him.
And did the baby land face down or perfectly?
She landed perfectly.
Perfectly?
Yeah, perfectly thrown it out the window. How we done it, I don't know. How we even had it in him to throw the baby out, I don't know what I would have done in that situation.
Yeah. And do you know Derek?
No, I know the family.
Right.
I don't know Derek.
Okay. So he was trusting you, a man he doesn't know, to catch his 3-month-old baby,
yeah.
Mila. She's a lovely little baby. I was just looking there, the picture of her, and there's great pictures of you, which are there's a dramatic plunge, and they've drawn a red arrow from the window in the picture down to your hands. That's my favourite picture from the papers. It's in the Daily Star on page 5. So I would expect People of the Year awards for you and hero medals and all that sort of thing.
Yeah.
You'll have to get an old speech going. You'll have to work on a speech.
I have a pose anyway, so...
You have a pose, yeah. Which is very important. It's a very emotional thing, I would imagine. Do you think it's changed you, Marie?
I think... No, because you just get on with things.
You're not different. Well, you are a different person because you've...
Well, you kind of just go on. You kind of forget about things nearly until having to kind of retell the story. But, yeah, you don't think it's a big thing. Once you get over the bit of adrenaline afterwards, once it all calms down.
And Emma, you thought you were fine and then you went down to your mum's house.
Yeah, because I was part of the crew on the ship, I had a change of clothes already there, so I changed. The paramedic guys did their thing and went away, and I put the small fit into the car, finally, eventually. I drove up to my mother's, and I was 36, I think, at the time. And I mean, I suppose I would consider myself a man's man as such. Like, I wouldn't be, but at the same time, I crying is okay, it's cool enough. But I walked in the door and she looked at me and I could see she knew there was something different, you know. And she said, "What's wrong?" And I said, "Nothing." And she said, "What's wrong?" And I just burst into tears. I don't know why, I just did. I suppose it just kind of caught up me at that moment, you know.
And
I told her what happened, and then I was fine.
Right. Have you cried yet, Mark?
No, I felt like it. You know,
it was all the attention, I'd say, more than anything else, was it?
No, it's the fact that if I'd have stood there and done nothing.
I was
just froze and just panicked.
That'd be worse. That would be far worse.
That'd be way worse.
I saved three people's lives in my time, and it's all down to a first aid and advanced first aid course I did. I encourage all people to do it. You never know when you will need it, says Gary. And my husband saved a man's life about a year ago with CPR and never heard a word from him, even though he knew who we were through mutual friends. Really had an effect on him, the fact that nobody wrote a letter or a card or picked up the phone. I had to do CPR on a stranger in April. I never found out did he live or die. Very strange how calm I was, but I think that's because I had first aid training. Do a course, you never know when it will be needed, says Tommy. And speaking of Tommy, we're inviting you all down to Tommy Tiernan.
Yay.
Hey, so you go on, actually. Go on, make your way down, because I have the bike. So you go on. Marie, thank you very much. Well done. Emma, thank you. Mark and Aaron, thank you. Off you go.